This is Phil Farron, and I'm driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 215. On our way to 7 years. So 7 years will be 7 times 52, which will be what, 264? 264? No. 364. Is that right? I think so. I was watching a TED Talk the other day of the guy who does mathemagics. I'm going to turn on the fan here a little bit. There is a big wind outside today. Big wind. Wind is blowing hard. I love it when the wind is blowing hard. Mathemagics. Man, that guy could do mathematics fast. He's like multiplying 4-digit numbers times 4-digit numbers in his head faster than they can work them on a calculator. It was amazing. Probably had to work to get there. And I'm just not willing to work that hard to get there. Maybe when I don't have anything else to do. So for me, when I go 7 times 52, I have to think for a moment. 364. Anyway, so it's been a good week. It's been a long week. I've been pushing hard both at work and at home. Had a lovely visit over the weekend with Lynette's nephew and niece-in-law. Came down from Kansas City. They have Google Fiber now. Oh. He said, yeah, it's pretty fast. Yeah. I guess so. But anyway, so they came down for Easter weekend, and we had a lovely weekend with them. I've been attempting to not get just 5,000 words a week done on this third book, but to get 7,500 words a week done. And that is predicated on the fact that I'm trying on Sundays to do 2,500 words. If I can get 2,500 words in on Sunday, you know, that means I just have to get 5,000 for the rest of the week. I can get an extra 250 here and there on the days, and boom, you know, it's 7,500. So, you'll be proud this week was... I lost my Sunday because we had Easter dinner and, you know, we had stuff to clean up afterwards, and everybody was pretty well gone by 4:30-ish, 4:45-ish, but it had been a good weekend, but we'd done some running around and talking and this, that, and the other, and so when I actually sat down finally to start writing, I don't know, it was around 5 o'clock or so, I was pretty blessed, so I only got 250 words as opposed to 2,500 words. So that kind of put me back a little bit. At least I knew I could get to 5,000. But, you know, I got quite a few bit done on... I actually was 750 words over on Monday, and then I was... Yes, he needs a new muffler, or maybe he just likes it. But I was able to get 750 words done on Monday over, and another 500 over on Tuesday, another 500 over on Wednesday. So I'm just chipping away at it, you know, I'm just chipping away. So if I get another 250 over today, and then I have two good days on Friday and Saturday, who knows? I might still make it to 7,500. That would be amazing. If I do, we'll see. The third book seems to be going well. You know, puttering along. I'm at that stage in the book where after I get, you know, 100 pages into it or so, I'm up next to this guy in the Porsche again, in case you can't hear that. You know, once I'm up around 100 pages, then a lot of times I'm like, okay, what comes next? What comes next? What comes next? Is this going to land? Is this going to land? Is this going to land? But I think I know where I'm going on this book. You know, we'll see. I'm up to like 35,000 words, so theoretically, I am a third of the way through this already, which I think I'm in pretty good shape. Because I've got some kind of filler for the middle part, and then, you know, I've got the extended section on the end, plus I have a whole other sub-theme that I haven't even introduced yet, that's going to be fun. That's going to be it's going to be the fun section of the book, because what's happening on the Dominion at that point in this book is not, there's not much going to be much opportunity for humor, so I gotta get it in my sub-theme, which is going to be, it is going to be a continuing problem as we go forward, because these books are going to get darker and darker and darker, and I may have to start,
excuse me,
leaning into the absurdist realm to find humor, so... We'll see. This is going to be interesting. But yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I got some ideas yesterday and this morning as I was getting ready. Started getting some ideas as to where to go. You know, to make it funner in the sub theme specifically. I had decided that the sub theme would start in a certain spot, and then the more I thought about it, the more I realized that that wasn't going to have enough pop, because I really need the sub-theme when it hits to pop, and people go, oh, hey, here we go, you know, because currently, start out of the book is a little more morose. I had a great breakfast with a buddy last Thursday. I don't think I mentioned this last week. A great breakfast with a buddy last Thursday. We talked about it. You know, and we talked about kind of where the books are going and what the, you know, overall kind of attitude, emotional attitude, environment, emotional environment of the books will be. And so, you know, he was giving me the book back that he had beta read, and so I just flipped it open to the first stanza of The Second Coming, and I said, well, this is the map for the books coming up, buddy. Kind of looked at it, and he said, so, there's two more stanzas in this poem. I said, yep. And he said, and they get worse. Yep. So, we'll see. We'll see. It's all just very fascinating. There, I am having moments in keeping with the theme of I'm going to use this sort of as a diary, this blog. In keeping with that theme, I am having moments where I look at this and go, this is crazy. This is nuts. Why did you ever start this in the first place? But, you know, it's going to be fine. It's fine. It's fine. Step at a time. You know, step at a time. I was even thinking this week that, well, you know, maybe after I get all these books knocked out, when I'm 72, maybe I'll just take a couple of years and go back and edit them. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. We'll see. That little part of me that wants to do better than just passable mediocrity, you know, it's that little part of me that says, you know, you can really clean these up. And no time. Gotta keep writing. Gotta keep pushing. Push. Anyways, this week, so that's all fine. Everything's good at home. Everything's good. It's good. We had a great Easter service. Lizzie and Alan worked together on it and it went great. It just went good. Very moving, very touching. They had, I think I mentioned last week, they're going to have these vignettes, and the vignettes were cool. They were cool. Don't hit me. Please don't hit me. Slow down your van. There you go. Coming to a turn here, and there was a car in front of me and the van behind me. Oh, sorry, this slid. was coming up pretty fast. And so I leaned back and put my head on the headrest just in case. One of these times, this is going to happen. If I keep doing this long enough, sooner or later, I'm going to be in an accident during the podcast. Had a good Easter service. The vignettes were really cool. They had set up little small areas out in the foyer of the church where there was small little, you know, encounters you could have. And they were beautiful. They'd done a great job. Everything looked great. Just, it was beautiful. So I guess the shepherds who had the two little lambs, one of them, one of the little lambs just beed all over the guy, I think. But that's going to happen when you're working with live animals. So, all in all is well. It's very, very good. Oh, I should mention that last week I had talked about my investigations and conundrums about what to do about voting. That I had to, A, find out if I could even vote, and if I could vote, how was I going to vote? Why was I going to vote that way? As it turns out, I could not vote in the sexual orientation, gender identity ordinance repeal. So once I found that out, it was like, well, okay, done and done. I did chat a little bit more about it with a couple of friends. A friend. We chatted a little bit more about it. He couldn't vote either, so. So that's that. It was repealed. And honestly, it was close. There was like 15,000 to 14,000. And out of 14,000, out of 29,000 votes cast, it came down to something like 852. So it was close. It's going to be back again. And, you know, eventually it'll get passed through. And honestly, I don't think it will make that much of a difference. Although one of the things that I think was effective in getting it repealed is there was an ad that started running towards the end where the ad said, the ordinance that was put in place by City Council is the same ordinance with the same rights and provisions that was enacted in Olympia, Washington. And last year, a naked man walked into the girls' locker room at, I don't know, some kind of health club or something. And, of course, you know, all the girls are saying, get out, get out, get out. And the man was kicked out, and he appealed, you know, and he brought a suit against, I think it was a health club, brought a suit against them on the basis that he had every right to be naked walking around in the women's locker rooms because he gender identified as a woman. So there you go. And of course, you know, the ad made the claim, which it's all just fear-based, but the ad made the claim, you know, with this kind of ordinance in place here in Springfield, the same thing can happen. So, you know, for whatever reason, it was not a landslide. It was 15,000-something to 14,000-something. It was repealed, but all that means is it'll come back around again, you know, and the council will try again. And then there'll be another vote again. And eventually, it'll be put through. And this is another one of those things that it's just going to be fascinating to watch over the next 20 years. This next 20 years, I may have to do the podcast for the next 20 years, except I won't be driving home in about 10 years. I will be puttering around. Well, maybe I'll be driving a hover round or something. I hope not. I intend to be mobile for a long time. But 20 years is going to put me at 76. Theoretically, it's going to put me 4 years or so after I finish writing the Windfall series. Maybe that maybe the next 20 years will be finished up by the time I finish editing the Windfall series. Who knows? Who knows? I still have stuff to do after the Windfall series, though. I've got to finish up That Faded Shore. I've got to finish up the Sun, the Wind, and the Rain series. I've got to finish up the Amanda series. I got so much to write. We'll get there. We'll get there. Anyways, so there you go. I was looking around for something to talk about that was fairly contemporary, and I have had this conversation with friends. The germ of this conversation that I've had with friends about companies and the ultimate destination of all companies really comes down to many, 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 many years ago when I was doing the Nitpicker's Guides. I was invited to go over Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and attend a convention there where they were very kind to me. You know, let me speak, let me talk about the book. I did like an auction for them. We just had fun. It was fun. Part of that was I sat next to John Delancey, who was there as well as the big star. Sat next to John Delancey, who played Q on Star Trek, and signed autographs next to him. And I, of course, attended his sessions to see what he had to say. And the question came to him, if you were Q and had the power to do everything, what one thing would you do? And without missing a beat, he said, I would eliminate religion. Organized religion, I think he said. Now, because he said, when you see what religion has done across, it's just terrible and we just should eliminate it. Okay. Okay. Well, all right. That seemed to me at the time to be a very myopic view. And after that, I developed a little saying about that type of thing. And that is, whenever you look across organizations, and really maybe that was the genesis of how I feel about organizations, but when you look across any organization, what you find is abuse of power. You find humiliation, you find dominance, you find people definitely not treating each other as they wish to be treated, and you find the churning up of the flesh as opposed to the churning up of the spirit, which is why I believe Jesus never started an organization. He discipled. He found 12 guys and discipled them, and it was only after Jesus left that we began then the formation of the organized church. And in hearing about John Delancey's opinion on religion, my response, if I was ever going to be asked to something like that, is, well, if you take a look at any sort of organized work that humans do, like big business, are we going to say that religion is the reason that big businesses sometimes oppress people, sometimes prioritize their profits over the health of individuals? Are we going to say that it's because of religion? Well, of course not. It's because they're big business. They're a big organization. When we look at educational institutions, are we going to say that educational institutions always, always, always treat everyone connected with them with the highest esteem and regard? No. Are we going to say the same thing about government? The government always behaves in way highest esteem and regard for all the humans they influence. No. Are we going to say that media companies, those great purveyors of entertainment, of television and movies and radio programs, that they alone treat all human beings around them, that they influence with the utmost respect and gentility and beauty and love and compassion? No! No, they do not. Well, what is the one thing that these all have in common? What they have in common is they are filled with human beings. human beings, when they get organized, there's all sorts of dynamics that take control. And when those dynamics take control, we get suffering. And so, contrary to what John Delancey thinks, the source of all human suffering is not religion or even organized religion. The source of all human suffering is people in any kind of organization. I'm getting my mail. One moment. A single solitary piece of mail. So, having said that, I'm always fascinated when people are looking for exceptions to that rule. And in recent years, I think I've mentioned it here before, I've had buddies point to Google, point to this, point to that, and say, see, those organizations, you know, they're great. Okay, well, I used to think Google was pretty great too, until I actually started working with AdWords, and then I realized that they're just used car salesmen like everyone else. And then here recently, I gotta tell you, my esteem of Google has been dropping. But I thought it was just me. One moment, I'm backing into my garage. As it turns out, I came across an article where the title of the article was "Don't Be Google," which is, of course, a takeoff on Google's famous visionary statement, "Don't be evil," that Google was saying that this is going to be our byword, this is going to be what we live by, don't be evil. Yeah, sure. So just quickly, since I'm already home, there was some interesting stuff in here. This David Christian wrote this article called "Don't Be Google." Josh Evans wrote this article called "Don't Be Google" on February 15th, 2015. And he said at the beginning of it, "Dear Google, what happened? Android sales are falling. Chrome has become a bloated hog," which I have noticed that. I have noticed that Chrome has become a bloated hog. You know, you shut Chrome down and then it doesn't shut down, and you go to the task manager in Windows and there's like six versions or five versions of Chrome running, and you have to kill them all to get it to release your computer. And it takes so long to load now, and I mean, it's just, I'm to the point where I'm just almost ready to... analysts are calling you the new Microsoft, or much worse, the new Yahoo, and most damning of all, you've squandered our trust. You used to be special, Google, or at least we used to believe that you were special, but you seem more and more just like another mega corporation. No kidding. So he gives a couple of examples of this. He started talking about the Zoe Keating kerfuffle. Now, Zoe Keating, I hadn't heard of her, but she's an excellent musician. Plays the cello, had recorded her own versions of a bunch of different songs, had uploaded them, had let people use her tracks to go ahead and put her music under other things, had her channel, was monetizing her channel, was using something called Content Tracker or Content ID, where she had signed up so that Google's little robots on YouTube would identify her music. And then if someone used it underneath something else, then she got a cut of that revenue. So, you know, it's a good thing. So then Google, like out of the blue, calls her up and sends her this new contract. And they basically just say, well, this is the way it's going to be now. And she talked about her different sticking points with it. First of all, they told her that all of her catalog had to be included in both the free and premium music service, because Google is forming a premium music service, and any of their content providers that are supplying any kind of music to YouTube, they just decided, yeah, all of that needs to be in our premium music service, period. We don't want confusion about what's in our music, you know, what's in premium. Everything has to be there. And if she doesn't deliver all of her music to them, then anything that a third party uploads with her info in the description will be automatically included in the music service too. So Google is just going to take all her stuff and put it wherever they want it. Okay. All her songs will be set to monetize, which isn't something she doesn't do. She will be required to release new music on YouTube at the same time as she releases it elsewhere. She used to have a policy that she'd release it free to her fans on another service, and then she'd put it on YouTube later. Well, YouTube is just saying, no, you can't do that now. You just can't. You have to give us everything you do if you want to be have any part of us. So that all her catalog has to be uploaded at high resolution, which is 320 kilobits per second. And when she signs on, it's going to last for 5 years before she can do anything. And rightly so, she said, you know, there's no other streaming service that makes these kind of demands. So what's this all about? What's happening? Well, as the guy in the article, and he gives several other examples, but this is going long. Anyways, so we'll just skip over the examples. What the guy talks about is what I came smack in my face, smack, what I smacked into face first when I started doing Google AdWords, is that there is this thing that he calls Awesome Google, you know, that's Google X moonshots and miracles and robot dogs rescued from the military and, you know, all that Google Glass and all that kind of stuff. That's Awesome Google. Said that they just give away stuff for free. And he said, but under the waterline, what you can't see is, in his words, a gargantuan advertising machine that paddles desperately, propelling Awesome Google towards its applause. And he said, we'll call that Mammon Google. He said, Mammon Google is a colossal money-making machine. And both it and Awesome Google employ thousands of the smartest people alive. And he said, I fully expect Google to overcome this business challenges it faces, but I no longer expect to be particularly happy about this. Because when you get a whole bunch of people together in an organization, and the organization becomes aware of its existence, eventually its first principle becomes, how do we continue to exist? And it's great as long as there's this fire hose of money coming at you. And people would say, oh, Google is so wonderful. Look at how kind and compassionate and wonderful they are. That's because they had this fire hose of money coming at them. And sure, let's throw money around and see what happens. But as soon as the handwriting is on the wall, like Google saying, well, let's start a premium music service where people will pay us now, because apparently their ad revenue is not generating as much as they think they could make with a premium music service. Maybe there are other people that are nipping at their heels now. Now they have to turn around, they have to start strong-arming all their content providers. And they'll win because they're Google and they're YouTube. They will win. But Awesome Google will surrender eventually to Mammon Google. And he makes another couple of points, you know, saying, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. One of the interesting things is that the vast majority of the employees at Google actually come from Microsoft. So he was in his article saying maybe that's the problem, that, you know, they got too many Microsoft employees over there. But I really don't think that's the problem. He did have one description of Apple in here that I thought was very good. He said, it's a gorgeous velvet glove enclosing an exquisitely sleek titanium fist. And that really is Apple. As long as you're just willing to toe the party line with Apple and just do it the way they want it done, when they want it done, Apple is great. But if you want to do anything else besides what Apple wants you to do, it's not so great. So, you know, he has some explanations for this, but I really think it just comes down to the bigger an organization gets, the more humans you get involved, the more flesh gets stirred up, and it really doesn't matter what your goal, what your vision was at the beginning. Those things all get crunched around and sanded down to where what's left is, how do we continue to exist? And if there's any trending or handwriting at the wall, on the wall, we're going to just pull out the stops, and we're going to force people to do things that is most beneficial to us, not them. And that's why I say that it is organizations filled with people, whether they are religions, whether they are businesses, whether they are governments, or whether they are even the wonderful entertainment industry. It is organizations filled with humans that cause human suffering. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.